Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington, D.C. that the government does not want you to know. And I'll tell you what the government does not want you to do. They don't want you to go out and see Michael Moore's movie Fahrenheit 9/11. No, conservatives, and of course the government's controlled by conservatives right now, controlled by the Republican Party and the presidency, House of Representatives, Senate, and Supreme Court, none of them want you to see Fahrenheit 9/11. Conservatives have done everything. They tried to keep Disney from showing the film. They tried to get theaters to back down from showing the film. But of course, we all know that it is the highest rated documentary in the highest grossing, I should say, documentary in its first weekend in American history. And so I hope all of you will go out there and see the movie. Now, I'm going to talk about the movie today. And don't worry, I'm not spoiling the plot, because the plot is history. I don't think anything I discuss today, and I'm going to be discussing the movie in detail, I don't think anything can ruin your enjoyment of the film. Some things you know, but it's interesting to see how Michael Moore brings them all together. In fact, about 95% of what Michael Moore discussed in his movie is already been discussed here on the Inside Scoop. Some of it we discussed a year ago. And yet I think Moore very eloquently, very persuasively draws all these things together in one very powerful, very moving 2-hour film. So as we talk about the film today, don't turn off your radio. Even if you haven't seen the film yet, I think maybe I can give you some insight into what you're about to see. And, of course, if you've seen the film, I want to hear your comment on it. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Before we start, I want to welcome back all my RadioPower.org listeners. I know that Radio Power was shut down for a couple weeks. That's largely due to finances. This Radio Power, of course, is entirely financed by listener donations, and they just didn't get enough. And so I understand that they have gotten enough now. I want to thank all of you for contributing, helping keep this wonderful progressive talk radio show on the air. They, of course, do not just my show, but Tom Hartman, Tony Trupiano, a lot of really good progressive radio, and I'm really glad those of you that contribute, because I got to tell you, you can hear it through my website at RadioInsideScoop.com, but only through Windows Media and all this technical computer stuff that I don't like to talk about on air. But I can tell you this, some people I know can only hear me through RadioPower.org, and those listeners specifically, I want to welcome back. There's really all kinds of ways you can listen to the Inside Scoop, and Radio Power is a very important one. So now let's move on and talk about Michael Moore's movie. I've been talking a little bit about it all this week. On Monday, I did a show on my anniversary and how I got into radio. And, of course, Michael Moore's movie made me remember a lot of that. And then yesterday, I was arguing with a conservative on Election Tuesday about the film. So we've dealt a lot with it, but I guarantee you we're going to bring up new stuff today. When we left off discussing the film, discussing at least my life as it impacts on the film, we'd just gotten through the selection of 2000. I know it's kind of hard to believe, given that the film spends only 5 minutes on the events predating the Bush presidency, but since they were such an important part to my life and how I got into radio, I spent a lot of time giving you the inside scoop, giving you the background behind some of what was going on. But as I mentioned on Monday's show, and you can check out the archive at RadioInsideScoop.com, the selection of 2004, of 2000, I hope there's no selection of 2004, the selection of 2000 by the United States Supreme Court, the choosing of the President of the United States by the court, disregarding the will of the people, hadn't been done before, and it certainly upset me. And it led me to write a piece called A Layman's Guide to Bush v. Gore, which led me to be on a dozen radio shows, got me on my start in radio. And certainly it's portrayed by Michael Moore, though not in much detail. And I went on and described how the Saturday, January 6th, 2001, when they were counting up the electoral votes in Congress, I wrote the brief for the Congressional Black Caucus challenging the Florida electors, and that you also see early in the film. And I described on Monday's show why it was that no senator would stand up and support the challenge. Moving on, when the inauguration came, I decided to come to Washington, D.C. to protest. Now, I wasn't living here yet. I was still living in California, I'd accepted a job to work with the Democrats, but I wasn't living here, yet I felt it was important to protest the inauguration. Now, I certainly was not a fan of Bush Sr., I was not a fan of Ronald Reagan, but I certainly didn't go to protest their inaugurations, nor would I have, because the American people chose Reagan and Bush Sr. to be president. And even though I disagree with the choice of the American people, I recognize in a democracy, that's our choice. We the people can decide. So I didn't go to protest that. And in fact, I don't know of any real major protest in inauguration history until the inauguration of George W. Bush. And I'm proud to say that on a day filled with terrible sleet and hail and the worst weather you could possibly imagine, it was like 33 degrees and lots of precipitation, we had protesters out in force. We were there, in fact, I'm sure, because I was there and I talked to lots of people, there were two protesters for every person supporting the president. And I'm sure that that is unheard of in American history. I would argue that there was at least 150,000 of us there. There were probably more, lining the streets in the sleet, in the cold freezing rain, making clear that we believe that American democracy should prevail and not the installation by a corrupt court. And, of course, that is portrayed in the movie, in Michael Moore's movie. And he does mention the part that I saw with my own eyes, where the president's motorcade came past the protesters. They really had corralled us protesters into a very small area. I mean, there's the whole parade route down Pennsylvania Avenue. And even though we were twice in number than the supporters, we were maybe allowed in about a third of the route. So you saw this very, very dense area where all the protesters were, and very sparse out in the rest because the supporters were there. I actually went in and broke the protest rule and mingled with some of the supporters for part of the time. But when we came to the protest area, it is true that the motorcade was going slow enough for Bush to wave out the window. His Secret Service members were walking next to the car. When they hit the protest area, the boos were so loud, the hissing was so loud, the number of eggs thrown at the car were so great that it's true, the presidential motorcade took off, and the Secret Service members had to sprint to keep up with the car, and they really had a difficult time doing it. In fact, I remember seeing one Secret Service guy actually jump onto the back of the car, the presidential motorcade. He jumped onto the back holding on because he couldn't run fast enough to go as fast as they were driving to get past the protesters. I also recall, and again, these are the kinds of things that aren't reported, but I remember with my own eyes, someone had a bag of urine that they were going to throw at the presidential motorcade. That person actually was arrested. But I remember the feelings were very, very strong that the American people should decide the presidency, not the Supreme Court. And so I guess that's the background behind the inauguration. And then as Michael Moore points out, the Bush administration had very low ratings from the date of inauguration until September 11th. I think Americans decided to give this guy a chance, even though he wasn't elected. And so his rating started in the 50s and went down to 45 right before September 11th. And partly that's because, as Michael Moore makes clear, he spent the first 40-something percent of his presidency on vacation. Now, you know, it's a new administration. You'd think he'd be raring to go to do stuff. But, of course, he's in Crawford, Texas. I think the number is 47%. Almost half of his time is spent on vacation. And, of course, there's that wonderful picture by Michael Moore where the president talks about how important it is to fight terrorists. And then he says, now watch my swing. And he swings a golf club. Well, that's the kind of president we had. And I remember complaining about his vacation. But by then, in fact, I was working in the Congress. I was hired by Congressman Barney Frank and the Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee at that time to be counsel for them. As I said in my show on Monday, this all came out of impeachment and me handing my resume over. But I remember the early part. I was, frankly, it took me a long time to figure out exactly how this thing worked. Congress is not like you see it in the social studies books. It doesn't just it's not like you just write a bill and everyone gets to vote on it. Oh, no way. There's all kinds of procedures to protect the majority, in this case the Republicans, to make sure that the Democrats have no say in any of the bills. And although George Bush ran as a uniter, not a divider, he was really not into bipartisan bills. He very much wanted to run his own partisanship bills and override the Democrats, which he did time and time again. Well, obviously the next event of importance is September 11th, 2001, a day which I think all of us will remember for the rest of our lives. In fact, I remember thinking on September 11th, 2001, wow, this must have been what Pearl Harbor was like. This must have been what the assassination of Kennedy was like. I knew that those days, people older than me would say they would remember for the rest of their lives. And I remember thinking, I wonder if we'll have that kind of event in my life. Well, we did. September 11, 2001, I arrived at the House Office Building where I worked, the Rayburn Office Building, and heard in the parking lot as I was going upstairs one of my coworkers saying a plane hit the World Trade Tower. And so we ran upstairs, we turned on the TV, we saw the first World Trade Center burning, and it was pretty stunning. It was pretty stunning. I mean, all work stopped. Though I have to tell you, some people didn't get it. Some people were like, trying to go on with regular work. I didn't want to work. I wanted to see what was going on. And then, of course, I was watching the TV live when the second plane hit. And by then, we all looked at each other. We all knew it was a terrorist attack. There was no question about it. One plane could be an accident. We didn't understand what was going on. The second plane clearly was purposeful. And I couldn't help but think as I saw Michael Moore showing George Bush after he heard the second plane was hit, and he spent 7 minutes in the classroom continuing to listen to my pet goat, that maybe he had better things to do. And I remember being disappointed. I got to tell you, not only did I not vote for George Bush, but I think he's the first president in American history that was not chosen according to the Constitution, not chosen according to the elections, with the possible exception of the disputed election of 1876. If you really want to know the details on that, I'll be happy to tell you. I certainly like American history. But with that possible exception, this was the first clearly illegitimate president in American history. And yet, even I, when I knew that Americans were being attacked, particularly after I saw the World Trade Center crumble to the ground, I wanted our president to take action. I didn't care. I only cared a little that he was illegitimate. I only cared a little that he wasn't elected by the American people. I wanted to see a strong response. I was angry. And frankly, I got to tell you, I was ready for a declaration of war against whoever caused this. And I remember very clearly sitting there watching it. And some people were talking about, should we leave? And then we heard that the Pentagon was hit. We heard the State Department was on fire. That turned out to be false. And then we got a knock on the door. It was a Democratic staffer from next door. And she ran in and said, "Hey, the Republicans have deserted the building." The Republicans have left. And I was thinking, why didn't they tell us? Well, it turned out the Republicans had deserted the building. Someone had alerted all the Republicans to go. We didn't know. But when we heard that, we ran out clearly thinking, you know what? After the Pentagon, after the two World Trade Towers, it's highly possible that another plane was going to hit the Capitol, which connects to the Rayburn House Office Building and a tunnel underneath. And, you know, I don't know what would have happened if I think I do know what would have happened, actually, if the people in Pennsylvania hadn't been such heroes. I suspect a plane would have hit the Capitol, destroyed that beautiful dome. The building, I think, is really the most beautiful building in Congress, in Washington, if not the United States. I mean, I love our Capitol. I love the dome. More than that, of course, all the people inside. I knew lots of people in the Capitol that day that would have been killed. I myself worked in the Capitol very frequently, and who knows, a fireball could have come through the tunnel and come after us at the House Office Building. But we heard the Republicans had deserted the way. We left, and we're stuck actually in the bridges and tunnels in Washington until for a couple hours. But I do think that September 11th was a day that will always be remembered in our lives. And as I watched Michael Moore's movie, I was very impressed by what he did. He did not show the towers burning. I mean, that would be the obvious choice for any movie maker. Show the two towers as they're burning. We've all seen the image. But Moore realized that we'd all seen the image. We knew what it looked like. And so he had it just dark. You could just hear the sounds. And then he showed people looking up. He showed people's faces looking up, running. He showed our reaction, which I think was really quite powerful, a quite powerful portrayal of September 11th. I'm going to go to commercial break now, but I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm going through the movie, and I'm trying to bring it down to the things that I was involved in, which was a lot of the movie. I tell you, a lot of what was in the movie are things that I personally worked on in Congress, or at least have some story to tell. And that's what I'm going to do as we go through this hour. But if you want to call in and give your memories of 9/11, or your impressions of the movie, or how, you know, something in the movie affected you or your life, please do. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. And in addition to the movie, you want to talk about the turnover in Iraq, you want to talk about the recent Supreme Court decision. I don't know how we'll do it all in an hour, but let's try. 877-57-SCOOP, and we'll be right back after this.
What's wrong with you people? Don't you know that the economy is humming? That our very own president has declared mission accomplished on his promise of prosperity? That the stock market is up by 40% over last year? That jobs are cropping up like crabgrass? That the bluebird of happiness is officially singing everywhere across our land? And that you should be grateful, for God's sake? Republican politicians, corporate economists, and the media barons are totally befuddled these days because their economic statistics tell them that the economy is in great shape. Yet you wretches, are still grumpy, even giving Bush the lowest marks of his presidency for his economic stewardship. George himself has gone into one of his high-pitched whines, chastising those who can't see the sunshine. He's sounding a whole lot like his daddy did back in 92. Like he's just another rich son of a Bush who is totally oblivious to the realities of America's workaday majority. He's looking at rosy economic indicators handed to him by his political operatives, rather than looking at such real-life pocketbook indicators as jobs that only pay poverty wages, gasoline topping $2 a gallon, milk at $4.43 a gallon, health care costs rising three times faster than wages, and 401ks being shrunk to 1ks. Also with their heads in the clouds are such media powers as the New York Times, which recently bemoaned the public's economic gloom, referring to it as a mood. A mood? Your job's being downsized or offshored. Your kids can't afford to go to college. Bush is trying to cut your Social Security benefits and raise your retirement age to 70. And they think you're moody? Meanwhile, a clueless Republican Senator, Jim Talent of Missouri, blithely says that prosperity is everywhere, but, quote, it just takes a while longer for that to filter through to folks. This is Jim Hightower saying, filter this, Senator. We'll believe the economy is humming when we are.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
You know, out here in West Texas, it gets really hot, and it's a tough, dry heat.
Glenn Austell of Lubbock, Texas, talks about Gold Bond medicated powder.
When I'm working outside, my skin gets itchy and irritated. I guess you call it a heat rash or something like that. But Gold Bond relieves the itch and irritation and gives me a cool, refreshing sensation. I'm telling you, once you've tried Gold Bond, you can't live without it.
Gold Bond medicated powder cools and soothes heat rash and irritated skin. Use it directed.
I mean, who wouldn't want to feel cool and refreshed?
Welcome back to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. We're discussing Michael Moore's film, Fahrenheit 9/11, and whether you've seen it or not, I want to encourage you to call in at 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. And, you know, I want to know how it affected you. I want to know how the movie made you think. What did you think about the blackout of showing 9/11, not showing the towers? Again, I thought it was particularly poignant. I thought it was very powerful because we knew the images. We knew the images in our mind, and we could all put in our own horrific imagery there. I think that Michael Moore showed a lot of respect for the 9/11 victims, as is appropriate. You know, sometimes I think Michael Moore goes too far. I'll be willing to admit that. But definitely not in this film. And, you know, I gotta say, I mean, he's a guy who helped me out because he helped pass around my layman's guide to Bush v. Gore, which he praised to the hilt. And so, notwithstanding that, sometimes he goes too far. I don't think he went too far in this film at all. Indeed, a lot of what he talked about, we talked about here on the Inside Scoop. In fact, one of the things that he talked about, that we talked about, had to do with the Saudis that got out after September 11th. Now, one of my best shows, I think, was when I had author Craig Unger on this show, here on the Inside Scoop. And Craig Unger was also prominently featured in the Michael Moore movie, Fahrenheit 9/11. And, of course, what Craig Unger's book is House of Bush, House of Saud. He focuses on the incredible ties between Saudi Arabia and the Bush family and the fact that they've gotten $1.4 billion. Billion, not million, billion dollars from the Saudis, the Bush family and connections, from the Saudi families and connections over the course of the last few decades. Now, that's a huge amount of change, $1.4 billion, particularly going to a private family and private companies. And I was really glad that Michael Moore had Craig Unger on to talk about that and to talk about the planes that Bush approved to leave our airspace without even notifying the FBI to allow the Saudis and their servants, including two dozen members of the bin Laden family, to get out at the same time as all of our skies were clear of planes. I remember very clearly, because I live near a route where the planes go, how strangely silent it was after September 11th. Even the Potomac River was empty of ships. An occasional Coast Guard and military flight was there. And imagine if we had known as Americans that at the same time that our planes were being shut down, dozens of bin Laden members, dozens of Saudis and their servants, people from 20 different countries left on dozens of planes to go back. Imagine how angry America would have been. This story still hasn't been prominently reported, even when Richard Clark admitted it happened just a few months ago. And, you know, one of the things I would ask the Bush administration, if you're doing something, if you approve something, then you should be able to stand it being public, right? There's no security interest here. I mean, what is the security threat of Americans knowing that we let a bunch of possible terrorists go? That's not a security threat. If anything, the security threat is letting them go. As I mentioned on my show with Craig Unger, one of the people we let go, a guy named Prince Ahmed, was betting on horses in Lexington, Kentucky, knew about September 11th, at least according to the Al-Qaeda operative Zubaydah that we caught. So we have a guy that knows about September 11th. Again, if you want the details, check out the archives on my website at radioinsidescoop.com. But this guy knew about 9/11, was told all about it, didn't inform the American officials, was flown back ultra first class with gold-plated toilet seats. Again, I'm not making this stuff up. Gold-plated bathroom fixtures, flown out first class when no Americans were allowed to fly. And when we later find out that, oh, he did have a role in September 11th, and we asked to question the guy that we should have questioned back when he was in the United States, he has a suspicious heart attack and dies, 43-year-old man. This is very suspicious, and that's one thing, frankly, that I wish Michael Moore had put in the movie. I know he can't put everything, but the story of Prince Ahmed is important enough that, and it's in Craig Unger's book. I wish Michael Moore had gone a little bit farther on that one. So going on, talking about the background behind Moore's movie, I think the next step is to talk about the Patriot Act, because that was passed shortly after September 11th. Again, it has prominence in Moore's film. And Michael Moore shows the Judiciary Committee, the House Judiciary Committee, on which I worked. I was a lawyer working for that committee, for, you know, a high-ranking member on that committee. And Actually, the picture is shown for about 3 seconds. If I had it on TV with my TiVo, I would have paused it, you know, and checked to see if I could see me in the background. But I was hard at work there on the Patriot Act. And in Moore's movie, and again, I understand that he only has 2 hours. He can't give everything in the kind of detail that I can give to you on the radio. But in the movie, Michael Moore seems to suggest that Democrats and Republicans, you know, rushed this bill through and didn't get a chance to read it and voted for it on the floor. And I want to give you a little more nuance to the story. What Michael Moore shows in the film is he shows John Conyers, the ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee, the lead Democrat on the committee, a very distinguished congressman from Michigan, who I have a lot of respect for. And he shows John Conyers, and he asks John Conyers, a Democrat, you know, why is it that the members of Congress passed this bill that they had never read? In fact, Michael Moore later shows him, you know, in a van going around saying out the window, it's what the Patriot Act says. And John Conyers throws up his hands and said, you know, we don't get a chance to read everything that comes through, that these bills are long and we don't have time to read them all, and members of Congress pass bills all the time they don't read. And that's true. That is true. The bills are long and members of Congress do pass bills all the time that they don't read. And Michael Moore, of course, makes it seem like both parties, Democrats and Republicans, are equally at fault there. Well, I got to say, as a partisan Democrat who was there, I want to give you the entire story because there's a little bit more nuance I think you need to know and need to understand how it works. And I take this thing a little bit personally because, hey, I helped write part of the Patriot Act. The good part, I should say, before you call in and attack me, although you're always welcome to call in at 877-57-SCOOP. Let me explain to you how it worked because, like I said, I was there. When the John Ashcroft, Attorney General, brought to us what would later become the rough draft of the Patriot Act, it was clear that this was something that the Justice Department, the FBI, they'd wanted for a long time. It had nothing to do with September 11th. There was all kinds of different things they wanted, ways to wiretap people, ways to watch people that they didn't have before. It was a laundry list of things. And a lot of it had absolutely nothing to do with terrorism. And they brought it to us there on the Judiciary Committee. And some of it made sense. I got to say that right away. Some of it made sense. For example, the idea that you could tap a cell phone. Well, if you can tap a regular phone, we should be able to tap a cell phone. And some of it didn't make sense at all. For example, the idea that they could tap a phone booth. All right. Well, it makes sense. Drug dealers might use a phone booth. But they argued that if they tap a phone booth to catch a drug dealer, that they can listen in to all the other conversations of the people using the phone booth. Well, he objected to that. It's one thing if you believe that some criminal is going to use a phone booth and you tap the phone and you catch him and you got a court order, you know, that's the way criminal law works. I don't have a problem with that. But the idea that once you tap that pay phone, you can then listen to 100 innocent people using that phone and search them for crimes, that I had a real problem with. So I got to tell you what we did on the Judiciary Committee. We Democrats and Republicans worked together. There actually was an amazing atmosphere of bipartisanship that lasted for a couple months after 9/11. I think we were all working together as Americans to get together to have a bill that would protect American security, but at the same time protect our civil liberties, protect our constitutional rights, our Bill of Rights. So we worked together, and we worked very long hours. The Republican staffers and the Democratic staffers. The Republicans usually were focusing on more things to check for terrorists, but not all. Democrats cared about that too. And the Democrats tended to focus on civil liberties, but there were some Republicans that cared about that too. Really, it was an amazing bipartisan experience, the first and only one I ever saw when I worked in Congress, where we really worked together. And at that time, Bush wanted to, you know, push it down our throats, and insisted that we have this bill without any hearings, that it go right to the floor and vote on it the next day. Well, I got to give credit to the Republican chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Congressman Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin, a person who I'm not a big fan of. He helped lead the impeachment hearings against Bill Clinton. But he felt that we needed to do a fair bill, the Patriot Act. And so he said, no, this is important. This is American civil liberties. We need time to work on it. And we spent 3 weeks, day in, day out, weekends, getting together, Democratic staffers, Republican staffers, and we hammered out a compromise. A compromise, frankly, that I'm proud of. A compromise that would have protected American security, definitely allowed taps on terrorists, but at the same time said, if you're not a terrorist, if there's no reason to think you're a terrorist, maybe you're a drug dealer, or maybe you watch pornography, or who knows what you're doing, we shouldn't have these huge government powers to tap your phones and look at everything you're doing and read your email if you're just a petty criminal, or maybe you're not a criminal at all. So we drafted a really carefully balanced compromise that protected America's security and protected America's civil liberties. And to show you how amazing that compromise was, the House Judiciary Committee is composed of some of the most partisan Democrats and partisan Republicans on the Hill. On that committee is Maxine Waters of California, Barney Frank, Massachusetts, some, you know, very liberal Democrats, Zoe Lofgren, really some quite strong liberals, and some conservatives, people like Lamar Smith, Sensenbrenner. Most of the impeachment managers are there. Again, very right-wing people, very left-wing people. And we came together as one, I'm very proud to say. It's the only time I can remember in the history I worked on House Judiciary Committee, we had a bill and it was voted on unanimously. Everyone, from Maxine Waters on the left to Bob Barr on the right, agreed this was the appropriate compromise between civil liberties and protecting our security. And when that bill was passed, again, the only time I've ever seen this, people rose and gave it a standing ovation. We had worked together as one, as Americans. We'd put partisanship aside and drafted a bill that all could be proud of. Well, then what happened? Well, I'll tell you what happened. George Bush saw the bill. John Ashcroft saw the bill. Didn't like it. Even though every Republican on that committee had voted for the compromise bill, they didn't like it. In fact, at the time, by the way, the 5 pages I wrote of the Patriot Act, 200-page bill, I wrote 5 pages of it, were in that compromise. My 5 pages, which was the Barney Frank Amendment, said that if they misuse the information that they get from tapping the phones, you can sue the government, and you can get that person disciplined, and you can get damages, even if you can't prove who it was who told these secrets about your life. If the government's spying on you, and they have no right to do so, and they tell secrets, much as J. Edgar Hoover did to Martin Luther King in talking about his extramarital affairs, then you could sue the government for damage. I'm very proud of the 5 pages I wrote of the Patriot Act. But what happened? It passed the Judiciary Committee unanimously, went to the House floor. John Ashcroft didn't like it. He thought it was too protective of American civil liberties. So the morning of the vote, they substituted the bill that we worked so hard on. They threw that one in the trash and substituted a new bill in its place, the bill that would later become the Patriot Act. And that's the bill that was voted on. That bill was brought in the morning and voted on in the afternoon. And I got to tell you, when John Conyers said we didn't have a chance to read the bill, he's absolutely right. But that's not the Democrats' fault. In fact, it's not even the fault of the Republicans on the Judiciary Committee. It is the fault of the Bush administration that insisted on throwing away the bill we so carefully worked on and substituting this bill in its place. And you know what's funny? This is a matter of public record. You can look up the congressional records. Absolutely a public record. And very few people know this. Very few people know that we worked together, came together to get a very good bill. My boss did not want to call it the Patriot Act. Patriot means providing adequate tools required to intercept and obstruct terrorism. You know, nice little acronym. My boss obviously felt that you shouldn't call a bill a Patriot bill because that suggests you're not a patriot if you vote against it. But he was willing to let the name go as long as that what was in the bill was fair. And as I said, what was originally in the bill was fair, but the bill that was put on the House floor was not. And my boss, I'm proud to say, voted against the Patriot Act. Now, the Patriot Act, as passed, at the end of the day, did have some good things in it. Some of the things we'd worked on before, it also had a lot of bad things in it. So when John Kerry says that he doesn't want to throw away the Patriot Act, he's absolutely right. Parts of it are good. But he wants to change and modify it, he's absolutely right there. Because parts of it are really bad, including the part that lets government read your email, even if you haven't committed a crime. And I got to tell you, we Democrats, we proposed, even on the House floor, a last-minute amendment. And our amendment to the Patriot Act said this: look, we know Al-Qaeda's out to get us. We know Osama bin Laden's out to get us. If you want to spy on people that you have reason to believe, you can show a court, you have probable cause to believe these people are terrorists, Go ahead, spy on them. You can have all the tools of the Patriot Act. We support that. But don't use these radical tools that violate our civil liberties. Don't read our library books. Don't read our email if it's a petty crime. If it's because you think someone might be using marijuana or watching pornography or, you know, those kinds of minor crimes. It's too important to protect our civil liberties. Just do it for terrorism. And that amendment was voted down on a party line vote. I am proud to say that last year, Bob Barr, Republican conservative Bob Barr of Georgia, came on my show and admitted to me on air that he regretted his vote, that he thinks the Democrats were right, that if we're going to restrict American civil liberties, it should only be for terrorism and not for all kinds of other things. And it just strikes me to this day as something that I've worked on, that no one seems to get it. Even Michael Moore falls into the idea that it's all bad. And the conservatives fall into the idea that it's all good. And the answer is more nuanced than that. And that's why I'm glad I'm on the radio, able to explain to you what it's all about. Parts of it are awful and need to be changed. But it's not so clear as night and day. If you want to call in, it's 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name and where are you from?
Yeah, this is Gordon from Michigan.
Hey, Gordon from Michigan. How are you?
All right. I'd like to make a comment about that blackout scene.
Yeah.
In Fahrenheit 9/11.
Go right ahead.
I thought it was quite poignant in that it wasn't like depictions of other attacks like Pearl Harbor or Remember the Maine. It was a complete anti-horror kind of a thing. It was a time to go, and as I was watching it, I was going into a period of quiet meditation and introspection and prayer, and it was very profound. I think it was perhaps the most profound part of the movie.
Well, I think what it made us do is it made us put our own images there in place. I mean, you know, it's actually the power of radio, the power of books, and that sometimes the images we have in our brain are more powerful than anything we could see in video. And I think he was showing that. These are images that are burned into our memories. And so each of us saw our own images. Like you said, I thought of where I was that day. I thought of running out of the House office building. I thought of seeing it on TV. And I agree. It was a very, very powerful technique, and I think it was a very good one.
Yeah, these images were already burned into our psyche,
right.
But we really didn't have to see it.
Right, and you know what's interesting? When you compare that to what, say, Bush has done, where he shows images and where he shows people being taken out of the towers and tries to really exploit it, to me it was exactly the opposite in Moore's movie. It was an anti-exploitation. We know the horror of September 11th. He doesn't have to show it to us. We already know it, and I thought it was quite poetic. I agree with you.
And another point I'd like to make is that I think there's a real story in this Prince Ahmed death.
Yeah, and I'm surprised that wasn't in Moore's movie, because I know it's in Craig Unger's book. Usually I don't accuse Michael Moore of not going far enough, but in this case, I don't think he went far enough. But go ahead.
Yeah, I think, if anybody wants to write a bestseller, they get the info on this death, and you might just find implements in the story that get George Bush closer to the idea of treason.
Well, I have to tell you, I mean, it's all speculation because I wasn't there. I speculate not that Bush killed this guy, but that the Saudis, embarrassed by the fact that high levels in the government knew about 9/11, they killed him. That's what I think, but you may think something different.
Yeah, I think there's Saudi guilt involved there, but the connection between the Saudis, the Bin Laden family, and the Bushes can't be denied.
Well, I think that is why they all got out. I mean, again, if the American people had known at the time it was happening, can you imagine 3 days after September 11th, headline, New York Times, Bin Laden family escapes with Bush's permission, FBI not told. Can you imagine? There'd be riots in the street. Now, with a little bit of hindsight, I think it's still amazing, still shocking. I think people would be a little bit calmer about it. But I think a president, when weighing what they do, has got to imagine, what would I do if people knew? It was completely impolitic. I'm sure Karl Rove didn't approve it. And the only thing I can say is it must be because of Bush's close ties with the Saudis that he even considered such a thing.
Yeah, that was the part of the movie that really got me angry.
Yeah, well, that's a powerful thing. And I know you've heard it, Gordon, but I want to encourage other people. If you go back and listen to the show I did on the Bush-Saudi connection, it really goes into a lot of detail about this. Craig Unger's done terrific work on this, and you'll want to check out that show. Thanks for calling, Gordon.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name? Where are you from? Caller, you there? Hello, caller.
Am I on?
You are on. Who's this? First name and where are you from?
Well, I happen to be up in New Jersey, but the weird thing is that somehow or other, from my job, I've tied into your radio show without even calling.
I don't know how you've done that. You didn't call in?
No, actually, I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm at my job, and the name of the company happens to be, well, it's a gutter cleaning company. I'm not going to push too much. But I was calling a client, and somehow I tied into your show. I was listening to the person before you.
Oh, well.
I was wondering how that happened.
I have no idea how it happened. Do you have a question or comment, or you just want to stay listening?
I'm going to come off, but
okay, well,
I don't
take,
understand how I tied into your show in the first place.
I don't either. If you want to check out my show, go to RadioInsideScoop.com. But thank you. I don't know how that happened either. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we'll take more of your calls and questions. We'll talk more about the Patriot Act and more about Fahrenheit 9/11 right after this.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Even though most seniors can't afford to hire a lobbyist, they're still being represented in Congress. Or are they? According to a new report by Public Citizen, the pharmaceutical industry all but wrote George W. Bush's recent Medicare legislation. Drug manufacturers and HMOs spent $141 million hiring 952 individual lobbyists in 2003. Craig Aaron is the author of the report.
There are 30 former congressmen currently on the payroll of the drug companies that worked on this bill in 2003. Also, a number of top officials in the Bush administration, including the head of Medicare itself, left almost immediately after this bill was passed to go work on behalf of drug companies.
Public Citizen is calling for a cooling off period of 5 years after a person leaves Congress before they can gain employment as a lobbyist.
State workers in California have preserved their own pensions, but future workers will pay in a big way. Faced with a new fiscal year starting tomorrow and a billion-dollar budget shortfall, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and the California State Employees Association, which represents some 140,000 people, struck a curious deal late Sunday. Current state employees' pensions will not be touched, but all new workers will be required to contribute into a state-administered savings account with no corresponding match for their first 2 years. In essence, new state workers will give California a risk-free 2-year loan. It's believed 3/4 of new state workers will drop out of the state pension system completely as a result of this new setup, thereby reducing the future retirement burden on the state.
In addition to delaying the return of 20,000 U.S. troops earlier this year, the U.S. Army announced on Monday it's planning to mobilize thousands more reservists for involuntary missions to Afghanistan and Iraq. However, they're drawing the 5,600 troops from the individual ready reserve, mainly soldiers who have already completed their active duty obligations and returned to civilian life. The Pentagon seems to be way off its original estimate to have reduced American forces in Iraq by 110,000.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A new study released by the League of Conservation Voters revealed just 25 coal-fired utilities in 12 states were responsible for the bulk of 58,000 pounds of mercury dumped into the air in 2001. A proposed Bush plan allows companies to bypass new clean air standards on smokestacks. Critics point to the $6 million in contributions utility corporations gave Bush in the 2000 election.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, bringing you the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. And today I'm talking about Fahrenheit 9/11. But I'm talking about it in the context of the role that I and many others played in the background, working in Congress, as I used to do. I just was talking about the Patriot Act, and talk about weird stuff going on. You know, it always makes me wonder. We always joke, hey, John Ashcroft is monitoring my phones. Well, maybe that was him. I don't know. Someone just apparently dialed a wrong number, but they liked the show enough to listen in. So, well, that was good. I always like to have new listeners. If you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. Let me know your impressions of the film or what you think about the background to the film that I'm giving you now. One thing I should say I did learn in the film, most of it had been reported on The Scoop before. That's not to take away from Michael Moore. I think it's very important to take the information that had been reported on my show and others over many weeks and put it in one tight movie, which I think he did. One thing I didn't realize was when he pointed to the AWOL documents of George Bush. Now, I'm quite familiar with those documents. Again, on my website, RadioInsideScoop.com, I have a long description of all of the data we have on Bush being absent without leave from the Texas National Guard, the orders that he directly violated, ordering him to take a medical examination, how that medical examination included a drug test, the possibility, and indeed quite likelihood, given Bush's refusal to talk about it, that there was a cocaine charge in there that led him to be AWOL, none of it which is in Michael Moore's film. But on one of the documents, which I'm familiar with, it's on my website, all the original documents, by the way. If you want to know all about Bush being AWOL, go to my website, scroll down, and you'll see the original documents. In them was a name that I didn't recognize of someone who was suspended from service at the same time as Bush was thrown out of the pilots' part of the National Guard. Both were thrown out for failing to take a medical examination. That included a drug test. But this guy, according to Michael Moore, also had connections to the Saudis. That's something I didn't realize. And so you can always learn something in this film. But moving on, and I did talk at length about the Patriot Act, mostly because I think it gets misunderstood. But I think Moore showed very clearly how the Patriot Act can and is being misused. It was amazing to me when he showed this California, I think it was California, wasn't it? Was it Oregon? Maybe you can remember. This peace organization, a group that gets together and talks about how to have more peace in the world. And again, you can argue they're sort of, you know, way left pacifists or not. They seem like decent people to me. I, you know, have a nice potluck and they care about their ideals. But apparently, we had an operative, an FBI operative, who had infiltrated this organization. Using, you know, Bush's powers of spying on people, and it's just amazing to me, given, I mean, when you think of all the groups that they can infiltrate, you know, the Ku Klux Klan or the militias with guns and all that are in Idaho, or, you know, all the terrorist groups that are connected to Al-Qaeda, and they're taking this peace group and sneaking up and finding out what's going on there. Well, that's also part of the Patriot Act, the bad part of the Patriot Act. And so I thought it was very good for Michael Moore to show us a specific example of how that act is being misused. Again, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name and where are you from? Hello? Caller? Are you there, caller? Someone is on the line, but they're not talking. Last chance, caller, to be on the Inside Scoop. Too late. Well, people are calling in, but they're not responding. Very strange. Anyway, I did think that was very powerful. And the other thing I thought that Moore did really well in the movie was his use of the troops and the mother of someone who died in Iraq. And, you know, it's very hard to show that kind of pain and agony of a woman who's lost her son to war, and to show that in a way that's respectful. And yet, I have to say he did. Indeed, this is the part that I found most chilling, indeed, and actually led tears to my eyes. You know, you have this mother of a son who was killed in Iraq, realizing, a mother who had family in the military for many years. Her husband, I believe, was in the Persian Gulf War. A woman who, during the Persian Gulf War, was angry at the demonstrators who were against that war, because she felt they were acting against America, against the troops. And yet, this woman, unfortunately after losing her son, the worst possible way to change your mind, comes across, goes to the White House, passes by a peace demonstrator who she this time treats with respect. And there's actually another woman there not treating the peace demonstrator with respect until this mother reminds the woman who supported the war of the cost of getting into that kind of war. And he also showed the cost in terms of the Iraqis. You know, very few people focus on the probably 10,000 Iraqi civilians that have been killed. Now, you know, I don't have sympathy for the al-Qaeda terrorists one iota, but I do have sympathy for civilians that are killed, particularly if they had no connection whatsoever to the terrorists, and I thought he showed that very well as well. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name and where are you from?
Oh, hi, Mark. It's Susan from Santa Cruz. I haven't called in forever.
Well, I'm always glad to have you call. Yes, have you seen Fahrenheit 9/11?
Yes, I have, and I thought that it was really amazing. Extremely powerful movie, and not easy to see by yourself. I happen to have gone by myself.
Oh, no, that's bad.
And I knew that, you know, and despite the fact that I knew probably about 90% of the information, I still was bowled over.
You see, me too, and I certainly, I mean, I report on this information. I knew, but I brought, the mother to me brought tears to my eyes. It really brought chills.
Oh, she was great. I was just listening to her on Al Franken morning. I don't know if it was done today, but she is an amazing woman.
Well, she really is. She's, you know, someone who has the courage of her convictions, who
right.
who realized that she was mistaken. You know, it's one thing to support a war when it all seems like it's going to be a video game and everything's going to come out just fine.
Right.
But these are real lives there.
Yeah.
And real wounded people too. You know, people, it's not just the 800 something lives that are lost, but the 3,000 people
right.
that have lost limbs.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing about the movie, that Michael focused on the human aspect all the way through it.
Right.
On people. So it was the first time, instead of seeing the towers coming down, you're seeing the people actually in it, actually reacting to it.
Right.
On the ground. That was extremely powerful.
I also thought it was powerful to show not just the troops in Iraq, but to show their houses, to show where they came from, to show the poverty that
right.
leads people
that
to join the military.
Too. All of it is a big wake-up call for America, and I'm really glad that he did it. I know a few diehard Republicans who won't even go to see it, and I asked them, I said, well, what's going to happen? You know, what's it going to be like for you when you find out that all of this stuff was a bunch of lies? And then there just came a look of consternation, you know, like one of them kept saying, well, nobody's guilty until they're proven guilty in a court of law. And I said, yeah, like O.J. You know, people are fallible.
Proven guilty in a court of law. Doesn't he understand how
yeah,
democracy
right.
works?
So we should try Bush and try the war.
Well, then, you know.
Then they'll believe it.
then I guess your friend supports impeachment, because that's the only way we're going to get this guy in a court.
Oh, it's really a difficult situation. I don't know. Impeaching, it seems like it would
take
energy away from the.
No, it wouldn't
the
happen.
Thing we have to do, which
yeah.
is get him out, you know.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't happen. And I think, obviously, the best way to get the rid of the president is to elect someone else. But it strikes me, and I got to say, I don't know if you heard my show yesterday. I had a.
No, you know, I haven't been able to get to, and I just figured out today. I could, because they changed the version or something, so my real player won't work with it anymore. And I just found out today I could get it on my son, so that's
okay. Well, terrific. Actually, I think part of the reason you couldn't get it is because radiopower.org was down.
It is
back again. You can still get it on radiopower.org. And on my website, you can get it using Windows Media Player. So I hope.
Oh, good. Oh, great. Thanks for telling me.
Well, I'm not just telling you. I'm telling everyone listening in, so people know there are all kinds of alternative ways to get this. Don't give up. You can try
yeah,
it on my website.
I'm so glad to hear you again, because I don't always like to listen to Randy Rhoads at 12 o'clock. You know, it's like she's entertaining and all of that stuff, but at this point, I just want the straight shooter.
Well, that's what I do. I'm not as funny as Randy Rhoads, and
no,
she's terrific.
You got the info, but, and you are a real humanitarian, and I love your show, Mark.
Well, thank you. I really
so
appreciate
keep
that.
Keep it up.
I will, and you keep calling in, all right?
Oh, I will.
Okay, take
right.
care.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Bye.
You. Well, you know, that's part of what I try to do. I try to give you the facts. Like I said, I'm not as funny as Randy Rhoads, I don't think. But I try to just give you fact after fact after fact, things from my own experience, things from my sources. I still have a number of sources on the Hill that give me information. And, you know, just to try to give you this background, that's why I'm on the air, folks. That's why I'm on the air and not working in Congress like I used to, because we had all this information that just wasn't being told to the American people. And so thank you very much for your call, Susan. I appreciate that. I do have to say that it was also powerful when Michael Moore went up and asked members of Congress if they would send their children. They you know, only one enlisted person. There's actually, I think there's three others that have children who are officers, but they don't face the same risks as the enlisted people do. You know, it's interesting what Susan said about her Republican friends that wouldn't want to see the show. The reason I mentioned the guy I had on yesterday is because this is a conservative who I got to give credit to. He at least was willing to see Michael Moore's movie. And, you know, there are plenty of things that I don't want to see. I'll give you an example. I did not want to see The Passion of Christ by Mel Gibson. Did not want to see it. And in fact, I don't advocate you going out to see it. I really don't. I don't think it's a good movie at all, in my humble opinion. But I was going to be discussing it on the air, and I knew I couldn't discuss it on the air without having seen it. You can't argue against something you haven't seen. So I went, gritted my teeth, saw it, and it was horrific. 9/11 is not like that. I think it's a very persuasive movie. And it seems to me if you have a friend who is conservative, who votes Republican, who refuses to see the film, you have to say exactly as Susan did. What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? If you're sure you're right, then you should go see the film. Because then you should be able to confront all the arguments. One of the things I like to do here on The Scoop, and I know my regular listeners know this, I love to have people on who disagree with me. It's, you know, Rush Limbaugh cuts off people who disagree with him. Sean Hannity cuts them off. Not me. I'd like people to call and disagree with me. Because I do believe I put thought and reason behind what I have to say here on the air. And I like to think that if someone comes in with other reasons, one of two things are going to happen. Either they're going to convince me, which is always possible. I can always change my mind. Or I should be able to answer their arguments. If I can't answer their arguments, then I need to reevaluate my own. And that's true no matter what position I hold or someone else holds. And the answer is, if someone refuses to see Michael Moore's movie, then you got to say to them, what are you afraid of? Are you afraid of being proven wrong? And if you are afraid to see Michael Moore's movie, then the answer is you really shouldn't be talking about politics. Because this is a very strong, cogent, powerful argument against what we did in Iraq. And if you support what we did in Iraq, then you should be able to deal with Michael Moore's movie. It's as simple as that. And if you can't, then maybe you ought to change your views. Maybe you ought to reconsider your views. And so I believe in free speech. I believe in getting it all out. I think, frankly, the people that tried to stop Michael Moore's movie, tried to get the theaters to shut it down. That's the same thing as Fox News trying to stop Al Franken from using the phrase fair and balanced. It just doesn't work that way. What it does is it lets people realize this is something really important, something you have to see. So this has been a 1 hour, I guess, commercial for the film. I don't agree with everything Michael Moore does, but this movie was very powerful. He constructs an argument, but he uses lots of facts to do it. And I really think it's worth your time to see this film. It's going to be a film that's going to be talked about, certainly from now till the election, probably long afterwards. And I think that all of you should get out and see that film. Tomorrow I was going to have a show on when it is proper to out gay politicians. I am going to have that show, and it's a fascinating issue. But my former boss, Barney Frank, had a scheduling conflict. You know, that happens when you're a member of Congress. So we're going to move that to next week. I apologize for that. But it should be a good show next week. Tomorrow, I want to focus on the Supreme Court decision. Again, that's what we do. We give you the facts. I am a constitutional lawyer. I want to go through the various Supreme Court decisions, particularly the ones on detainees, on civil liberties. Can you throw someone in jail for the rest of their life for an indeterminate period without charging them with a crime, without allowing them to have access to a lawyer? The Bush administration says yes, but 8 of the 9 Supreme Court justices say no. Even the conservative ones, the only person who was willing to support everything that Bush did was Clarence Thomas. And I have to wonder if this Supreme Court, if 4 of the 5 members that installed this guy in power, they may be fearful of the monster they have created. After all, Bush didn't come into office based on the Constitution, based on the votes of the American people. So he doesn't feel like he has to follow the Constitution. He can imprison anyone at will. That's our dictator. Huh. Ironically, fighting for, quote, democracy, unquote, in Iraq. Yeah, right. He doesn't believe in democracy at home. Well, the Supreme Court delivered a nice little whack at him. And I want to discuss in detail tomorrow what they said and what it means for the future of the war on terrorism and for American civil liberty. So tune in tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern to Central, 1 Mountain, noon Pacific, for another edition of the Inside Scoop. We'll talk also about the turnover in Iraq. And if you like the Inside Scoop, do me a favor, stay in touch. Susan had trouble getting in. You know, keep trying to get in. RadioInsideScoop.com or RadioPower.org. And most importantly, do me a favor, don't keep it a secret. This is Mark Levine signing off.